Françoise Weeks brings home the charm of the wild woods and her creative botanical arrangements that are so much more than bouquets of blooms. Our conversation about Wonder of the Woodlands, Françoise's new book, includes an exclusive visit to her Portland garden and design studio.
I've done woodlands since 2007, and you know, everything has evolved, and it's really very close to my heart. I love flowers, but now I really prefer to design with textures, and so appreciating the beauty of buds, appreciating the beauty of seed pods, letting flowers in the garden go to seed pods and discover the seed pods of any flower, whether it's asclepias or sweet peas or just name it, they are so gorgeous. I never ever know what I'm going to make, and it's literally by looking around on my bench and on all the materials that I have, whatever my eye is drawn to, that's what I pick up.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. This is episode 655. This is the weekly podcast about slow flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This show is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free online directory to more than 750 florists, shops, and studios who design with local, seasonal, and sustainable flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And thank you to the Gardener's Workshop, which offers a full curriculum of online education for flower farmers and farmer florists. Online education is more important than ever, and you'll want to check out the course offerings at thegardenersworkshop.com. Françoise Weeks is a good friend to the Slow Flowers movement, and she's a longtime member of our society. Regular podcast listeners will have met Françoise on a few earlier occasions, including on her first appearance, episode 217, in the fall of 2015, during Lisa Wadd's Flower House Detroit. Françoise collaborated with Susan McCleary to design a fabulous vintage kitchen filled with flowers and root vegetables, plants, and foliages. It was a delight to see. Anyway, I'll share the link to that episode in today's show notes. If I can find a photo of that beautiful installation, I'll add it as well. Françoise has influenced the floral community as an educator and artist, and we now have the delightful gift of her first design book, Wonder of the Woodlands, The Art of Seeing and Creating with Nature. The book will be published on April 2nd, so you're the first to hear all about it. And if you check out the video interview on today's podcast, you'll enjoy a peek into Françoise's Portland, Oregon studio, where we recorded our conversation. Here's a bit more about her new book. In this gorgeous celebration of the woodlands, renowned floral designer Françoise Weeks offers all the ways from simple to complex that you can bring the wildness and wonder of the forest to your indoor arrangements. Each chapter of Wonder of the Woodlands features the materials Françoise uses most: barks and logs, acorns and seeds, ferns, branches, moss, and lichen, showcasing how she builds her unique, beautiful arrangements, which last far longer than a vase of cut flowers. Inside are also Françoise's insights on seeking out the most unique natural materials for arrangements and how to responsibly forage or source them in a shop. And you'll find her tips on how to reuse materials so you can enjoy lots of different arrangements without increasing your environmental impact. Bursting with images of nature and suggestions for weaving that magic into your interiors, Wonder of the Woodlands is a celebration of arrangements that are inspired by a walk through the trees, with stunning photography of wild and wonderful wreaths, table arrangements, wall decor, and more. You can recreate the peaceful majesty of spending time in the forest in your own home. And here's a bit more about Françoise. Françoise was born in Belgium and started her business in 1996. She has infused her work with a quintessential European reverence for flowers and nature. Combined with creativity and mechanical ingenuity, she has crystallized her singular style of textural woodlands and botanical haute couture pieces, garnering a global following. Her innovation and love of teaching have brought her to many cities in the U.S., in studios, at wholesalers, at garden clubs, art in bloom events, and conferences, including at the AIFD Symposium. Françoise has taught in Mexico, Canada, England, Sweden, Iceland, France, China, and Australia. Her dynamic work has been published in national and international publications, such as Fusion Flowers, Modern Wedding Flowers, The Huffington Post, Flutter, and Milieu. Françoise's studio is located in Portland, Oregon, where she teaches and offers online courses, including Zoom workshops. She created The Herbal Recipe Keeper, a blank journal featuring her artwork, published by Timber in 2018. Before we start the interview, I just want to mention that you'll occasionally hear the voice of botanical artist Julie Beeler of Bloom and Die, a Slow Flowers member who lives outside of Portland. Julie joined me on my visit to Françoise's studio last week, and then the three of us had lunch together. I had wanted these two women to meet, and I'm so delighted that it worked out. Julie and Françoise share a mutual love of mushrooms. And Julie herself has a forthcoming book out this fall called The Mushroom Color Atlas, a guide to dyes and pigments made from fungi. And you'll want to keep an ear out for her appearance, a future appearance on this podcast when that book comes out. But for now, let's jump right in and meet Françoise Weeks. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Show. I'm Deborah Prinzing. We have a very special interview today. We're in the studio of Françoise Weeks in Portland.
So nice to have you here.
Thank you for saying yes and giving me a little tour. Oh my goodness. Yeah. There's little clips that I'll patch together of outside and inside of this amazing space. Your yard is very small, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like a tiny city lot.
Yeah, we just have a regular city lot, 100 by 50. There's a house, a little patio, and all the rest is garden.
Yes, it's so beautiful, Françoise. And you're teaching here, so if people are really want to get to know how your brain works, they need to come here. That's great. Did you build this studio when you moved here?
No, I started my business in 96 in the basement. I worked in the basement for 5 years and then ran out of space. And we hired an architect and a builder to build this wonderful place.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it wasn't there had not been a garage here then?
There had been a garage. It got torn down and then...
This kind of occupies it. But it's large.
It's about 16 by 19 feet.
How many students can you teach in here?
If it's a three-hour class, I'll do 8 people, so 4 on each side. And if it's a workshop, a two-day workshop, I'll do 6 people.
Mm-hmm. Just to get people room to spread out. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, this worked out great because I was going to be in Portland and I wanted to talk to you about your new book. And so I invited myself over. We invited Julie Beeler of Bloom and Die, and they've been geeking out over mushrooms. So you may hear Julie's voice or see her in some of the clips, because I think this is a new match that's going to lead to some cool things.
I am sure it will.
I'm excited. My mind is already reeling with possibilities.
Well, Françoise is a past guest of the Slow Flowers podcast. We've talked about many things in the past. We've talked about botanical couture. We've talked about your online courses that you're teaching. Mm-hmm. We teamed up with Hitomi to talk about floral trends. But this book is, it's a masterpiece. It's a work of art in and of itself. And it's one. I want to show the cover, Wonder of the Woodlands, will be published by Clarkson Potter.
Yeah.
Early April.
On the 2nd of April.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is coming out just a few days before that. So get your pre-orders in and the book will be in your inbox or in your mailbox very soon.
Yeah.
Come to the show notes at slowflowerspodcast.com. I will include a link to Françoise's event pages because she's doing a lot of public signings here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And then also you're traveling. So
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So Françoise, this is not your first book.
No.
Your book on herb gardening came out a couple years ago, right?
It was in 2018. I had been contacted by Timber Press, and they had done journals, illustrated journals before. And they asked me if I could do about 75 designs to illustrate a journal. And so,
like a blank journal?
It was a blank journal.
Okay.
So there was no text in the book. It was a super fun project because they told me I needed to use medicinal plants. Quite frankly, I didn't know much at all about them. I did a lot of research and found out that just about every single plant has medicinal qualities.
Good news for you.
I could use whatever I wanted. And I mostly did woodland designs, but also did a little bit of botanical couture, like jewelry and a few shoes and purses and stuff like that.
Was it then later made into a book? Is that it?
No. That was their idea for the book, to have a journal that was illustrated with with those designs.
So this required a different skill set of your writing.
This was, I didn't write. I'm not a writer.
I don't believe you.
No, I'm not a writer at all. So how this came about, in October of 2020, Leslie Jonath contacted me on Instagram and said, I like your work. Are you working on a book? And I said, no, I'm not, but I'd like to talk to you.
I'm working on one in my head.
And that's how it started.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Look at this. Oh, my gosh.
That's my happy place.
So beautiful.
That's my happy place.
And you worked with the same photographer who you've worked with many years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you felt really like you could art direct together and come up with the images.
Yeah, that was my request, that Teresa would be my photographer.
Teresa Bear.
Yeah, so she did the photography for the first book, and we have done probably well over 50 photo shoots together.
Yes. Any of the beautiful headpieces, wearables that people see on your courses or online, Teresa's your
most of the time. Most of the time she is,
So how did you get from that invitation to would you like to do a book to deciding on the topic and distilling it all into something that we're going to see this month.
Well, this really was Leslie. So Leslie is my agent. So she wanted the book to be on woodlands. And so she asked if we could do a photo shoot so that she could put a proposal together that she would send off to a number of publishers.
So something that would conceptually show what your approach would be.
Right. And so this friend of mine, Linda Barkley, she has 80 acres of these magnificent woodlands out in Oregon City.
Is that where we just saw you on the path?
No, that's actually at Tryon Creek Park.
Okay, okay.
And so we had a Teresa and my friends Jen Rich and Gwen Severson, who are fabulous stylists, we came up with the idea of doing a table that would be set in the woods and totally decorated woodland style. I did a beautiful log arrangements. They set the table beautifully.
Is it in here?
Yeah.
Oh, show it to us.
Yeah, it's in the moss section. So it's this.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, who wouldn't want to be here?
Yeah,
it's just a dream.
What a
collaboration. And look at that setting.
Yeah, so there's all these rocks that are covered with moss. And
all this natural wood. I love it.
And then we got the chairs. And then I had made this really beautiful woodland log that we set on a table.
Kind of an arching.
An arching one, yeah. And then Gwen and Jen, they took care of all these wonderful little details.
They set the table with your pieces.
The ferns on the napkins, and then we gathered all the lichens here. And anyways, it was a really, really fun project.
Oh, here's the log piece.
Yeah, that's the log piece.
Stunning.
There. And then, Teresa sent the pictures to to Leslie. So Leslie Jonath worked for Chronicle for 10 years.
Yes, I've known her for years, yeah.
And then she started her own business called Connected Dots Media, mm-hmm. which is such a fabulous name for a company, because that's literally what she did. She connected all the dots. So she
brought the photographer, but then she found your writer.
She found the writer,
Julie Michaels,
who is fantastic.
Yes.
And Julie, just like Leslie and just like everybody else, they really get what I do. And so, of course, all this was happening during COVID. And Julie is in Boston, outside of Boston. And so we did lots and lots of Zoom meetings. And she interviewed me many, many times. And she, because she's a nature lover also, she just really knew which questions to ask and, you know, find out about the process and all that stuff. And then she did a lot of research also because, you know, I use all this product, but I've never really done research on moss or research on lichens or anything like
because
that.
Because everything you do is so organic. Like you just are in your garden or in on someone's property and you see something you like.
Right.
So you know it's an artistic piece, but you don't know it's...
I don't know the science.
It's botany. That's okay. Let other people do that.
So Julie did a lot research for that.
So and the reader is getting that information.
Yeah, the reader is getting that information.
It sounds like it was a heartfelt, long, many-year project.
It was, you know, I've done woodlands since 2007, and, you know, everything has evolved, and it's really very close to my heart. It all sprouted from a childhood memory, and maybe that's why it's so close to my heart.
Well, tell us about that childhood memory.
So I grew up in Belgium, and between the time I was 6 until I was 10, we went on vacation to Switzerland for a month. My parents were avid nature lovers, and we didn't have a car, so it was this adventure on the night train.
And by the way,
to Switzerland.
Is it Louise and Georges De Wilder, parents?
Yeah.
De Wilder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, that's your maiden name, De Wilder. I love that.
That's funny.
What a wonderful memory.
Yeah.
So you go off to Switzerland.
We'd go to Switzerland. We'd go hike every day, and my mom would pack a lunch. And then after we'd have lunch, the four of us would go kind of ramble around and often look for a piece of bark and scrape some moss and pick some wildflowers. And somehow we affixed all that on that piece of bark and gave it to my mom.
And you and your sister?
My sister and my two brothers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All of you.
And,
okay.
And so that memory popped in my head of us doing that, popped in my head out of nowhere 45 years later.
Wow.
And
well,
I was working.
You said in 2007 you first did
it. In 2007.
Okay.
And wow. I was working on a project with a photographer and an art director, and I told them about it, and they said, you should run with it. And as a total introvert, I said, why? Who cares about this?
And Francoise, at the time, you were still doing a lot of weddings and events.
I was all weddings.
That aesthetic was... It was unique to you, but it wasn't woodland, was it?
So, right. I've always really liked to use a lot of textures in design.
Yeah.
But I hadn't done woodlands. And then I started. So what happened is they really pushed me to do a design with it. So I went to the flower market. I couldn't find bark, but I found a log. Ended up securing, just kind of placing things on it because I really didn't know what in the heck I was doing right before the photographer came. And then she took fabulous pictures of it and put it in my portfolio, and I still didn't think anything of it.
Hmm.
And then a couple of months later, this bride came, and she was getting married at Timberline Lodge on Mount Hood. And her
wonderful Northwest destination.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And her fiance's name was Woods. And so she saw this woodland, log arrangement.
Right.
And she said, can you make two of these for the buffet table? And can you emulate that look for the centerpieces? And that's how my journey started.
That is so affirming, Françoise, because it goes back to that idea that I've heard from many designers. Your good friend Sue McCleary, one of them, mm-hmm. is if you don't make the work you want to sell mm-hmm. and photograph it and have it out there for
yeah.
people's imaginations, it won't happen.
No, it won't. Yeah.
And you've been doing that ever since.
And so because I like to do it so much, I just would make it. And then I just had start in 2008, I got onto Facebook. And so I would post on Facebook and within, so I used to do about 60, 65 weddings a year. And within 5 years, 25% of my work was Woodlands.
Wow. Wow.
And so.
And in the Northwest, it's so yeah. about place. It wasn't yeah. like you were doing this in, I don't know, in the desert Southwest, although you could do a desert
yeah.
Southwest version
totally.
Of that, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
You respond to that.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. so it really has been a signature part of your
mm-hmm.
aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about what's in the book? I'm so interested in this, the table of contents. So you
yeah.
basically, it's organized by materials,
it's
really.
Basically organized by all the materials that I use.
Okay.
So we started with the first chapter is on bark, logs, and branches because that's kind of the base.
It's your foundation,
it's
right?
a foundation
yeah.
for everything I do. Then moss, of course, use a ton of moss. Mushrooms, I'm absolutely... loving that element. I buy most of the ones I use in at the grocery store.
And we filmed a little clip of you
yeah.
talking about how you dry them.
Yeah.
So that is going to be a fun inspiration for people to try.
Yeah. So mushrooms, and then I adore acorns. I never realized how many varieties of acorns there were. I feel really lucky that a lot of people send me materials from all over the country. And
if you're listening, fans, we'll post Françoise's address for you to send her a box.
And so people have sent me not only acorns, but other seed pods and whatever. You know, I don't know these people, and they'll text me and they
How
say,
sweet.
Do you have this or do you have that? And I'll go, no. And they say, can I have your address? And then they send them to me. So anyways, I've received acorns like from Texas that are absolutely huge. Ones in the San Francisco area, they are a lot longer than the ones that we have here
yes.
and skinny.
Yes, I've seen
those. Then there are some areas where the acorns are actually black, you know, versus the ones we have
from
here.
Different oak trees.
Yeah, all from different oak trees from different areas. And then, you know, of course, I love seed pods. So this is something that once that I started to do Woodlands and started to, I love flowers, but now I really prefer to design with textures. And so appreciating the beauty of buds, appreciating the beauty of seed pods, letting flowers in the garden go to seed pods and discover the seed pods of any flower, whether it's asclepias or sweet peas or just name it. They are so gorgeous. And so I love gathering those.
Right. So most people are disappointed when their bloom season is over
yeah.
and you're just getting started because you're seeing
yeah.
a whole other palette to work
yeah.
with.
Yeah. And it's like we live in an older neighborhood, so lots and lots of trees and older trees. And so in the fall, it's amazing all the seed pods, you know, of beech trees and oak trees and all these different trees that I can harvest.
Just
you know.
Rain down on the sidewalk.
It's all on the sidewalk.
Wow.
So as far as acorns, so I never really had paid attention to this. But so in oak trees, they start dropping these teeny tiny acorns in July. They're like 2 millimeters tall. They're tiny. They're so cute. And so now there's a big oak tree up the street here. I know in July I take a bag along and I just pick up a whole bunch of these teeny tiny acorns that are great in jewelry or anything.
Oh,
small,
right.
You know?
All your personals.
Yeah.
Do they produce larger acorns later
so
in the
that,
year?
Yeah. And
okay.
then the acorns just grow to the normal size, but the tree drops a fair number of tiny ones.
I'm sure I've seen them, but never looked closely at what they are.
I'll show them to you.
Oh, how interesting.
I've got a bunch. And then the last two chapters are on lichens and ferns. So all those elements that are so prevalent in the woods.
Right. So, I love that. And page 17, I just noticed, is how I build an arrangement. So you start by kind of your philosophy of that.
So I find a piece of wood or bark or a log that I like. Sometimes I secure it on a low container. Sometimes that is the container.
Or like that tall metal vase that someone gave you. That's a weird shape, but it works.
Yeah, and then I secure pieces of wood on there. I never, ever know what I'm going to make. Never. And it's literally by looking around on my bench and on, all the materials that I have. And I know it kind of sounds woo-woo, but it's like whatever my eye is drawn to, that's what I pick up. I try it here or there, and that's how I design it.
That's back to that be an observer. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people are used to recipes. Like, what's the recipe for this? And you're the anti-recipe.
Anti. totally.
So I've watched you teach before, and often, I don't know if you still teach this way, but sometimes you'll have finished pieces, and you'll just talk with the students about those decisions you've made.
Yeah.
And then you want to like let them loose to do their own exploration, right?
Right.
Because there's techniques, obviously, but there's not a step-by-step process.
No. So I like to talk about the mechanics that are behind it, like how do you secure a piece of wood onto here, or how do you do this, or how do you do that? So I talk about that, but then I let the students loose. They pick out whatever materials they want, and then they totally create their own thing, whatever the materials that they chose inspire them. Yeah.
I think this book is going to really ignite the imaginations of people who, I don't know, a lot of people stuff their pockets when they're on walks, but then they don't know what to do with this. They'll line the windowsill, but they can make something.
Oh, absolutely.
And you do vertical pieces so well, as we've seen, another kind of evolution from your original log, right?
Yeah, so about 3 years ago, a friend of mine mentioned to me that her husband was a welder.
Mm.
And so I asked her if Andre would teach me how to weld. So I went over and Andre showed me and a little bit more and a little bit more. And within a half hour, he said, so you can do this and you can do that. And a few minutes into it, I said to him, I'm going to hire you to do this because I don't want to learn this whole new skill. And so he has
great. He's your friend for life now.
He has made several welded pieces. And I kind of work with him the way I work with photographer. He does his thing and I do my thing. And so I might say, I'd like something tall, or I'd like a big circle or whatever. And then he does it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play.
And is the welding, is it steel bar? Not very thick, right?
No.
Okay.
Or sometimes he just plays and he comes up with a fun idea and he'll say, oh, I made something for you. And just like with photo shoots, we never exchange money. His wife, my friend Heather, loves floral design. So she comes and plays in the studio and that's our trade.
Oh, what a lovely collaboration.
Yeah.
So these pieces, these metal pieces, then you use over and over again for both horizontal tabletop and also vertical walnuts.
Yeah. And that's the other cool thing about the materials that I use for woodlands. I recycle them a lot. It's like if I made something for a photo shoot, if I really like it, I'll have it on my bench for a little while. But a lot of the time, because the piece of wood is really special and I'd like to reuse it, I just take it apart And I reuse everything. All the little bits and pieces go back in there.
Oh, you have trays and trays of
the mushrooms. The mushrooms go back in the basket. The tillandsia leaves go back. And so it's all this material that can be reused for a different project.
And if someone was a wedding and event florist, mm-hmm. they could have sort of the same approach that there are materials that can be either sent home with the client, but if yeah. they're not, if the client doesn't want them, they can be repurposed
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's something really wonderful about the not having to deal with perishability quite as much, right?
So that is, you know, like you saw the piece that's hanging on the wall of my studio outside. It's something I made 3 months ago. The ones that are on the bench there, I made them anywhere between 1 to 3 months ago.
Yeah. yeah.
And so you can, like even the succulents and the cacti, which I use a lot of, they will do great for weeks and months and months and months on there. But then if they don't look all that great anymore, you just pull them off and you replace them with something.
Do you see interior designers getting into this and seeing this as sort of coming to you or other people around the country to do mm-hmm. woodland type installations for the home? Because I could see
yeah.
mm-hmm. every season having a different mantelpiece or something
yeah,
like that.
You could totally do that. Again, it can be done horizontally or vertically. And the other thing that you can add on, because these are, you know, mostly browns and beiges and greens, but if you want a pop of color, like in the one that I made there with the big branch there,
mm-hmm.
I had added two beautiful orchid stems. I bought an orchid plant at Trader Joe's and I cut off the stems. I had them in water tubes and the orchids looked good for a month.
Wow.
And
wow.
so you can really, you'd have to be careful, you know, which flowers you would use and,
sure.
you know, you don't want to use anything that requires a lot of water because the water tubes, that wouldn't work very well in
yeah.
water tube.
Yeah.
But I'm like, orchids are great. And the other thing that I started to do last year, my friends, Sarah and Tom from Grateful Gardeners were
yes,
they
came to the summit
to come to the summit,
but they came to see you first and they
yeah.
brought your piece
oh,
and
right.
we
that's
used it at the check-in table. It fit perfectly.
That's right.
How did that happen?
So we connected over Instagram a couple of years ago and I really, really like them.
Yeah.
And so they came here first and I took them to the gorge and we went to the beach. And so Tom, the second day that they came here, Tom asked me if I had a flower press. And I said, no. And so he said, I'm going to build you one. And there's a hardware store up the street here. So I went to the hardware store and got the materials and built this flower press that's sitting behind you. There
okay.
I've seen their
flower press. I think they're selling... They're selling instructions now.
They
yeah.
do, and they teach classes. And so I played around with drying flowers and the foliage from the garden. The ones that are my favorite are the dried begonia leaves and the dried ferns.
Really?
Specifically maidenhair fern, because I adore maidenhair because it's just really so delicate and adds
yeah.
a touch of green, but they really don't do well as a cut.
No.
As a cut.
I've had crispy maidenhair before.
A lot of crispy
yeah.
maidenhair. But so I dry them for 3 weeks in the press. And then they are on all those designs that are on the bench here. And they've been on there for weeks.
It kind
months.
Of goes back to Julie's point about dehydrating
yeah.
mushrooms. Like
yeah.
anything that the drying of the maidenhair fern
mm-hmm.
somehow preserves it.
Yeah.
And it won't curl because the
right.
moisture is out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? You said you like begonia leaves and ferns, but you also use cyclamen or cyclamen leaves a lot.
Yeah, but they don't dry very well.
Oh, they
well.
Don't? Okay.
Yeah, I've tried because I like to use foliage of houseplants
yeah.
a lot, and I've tried a lot of houseplant foliage, and it's all trial and error.
I believe you because you experiment with everything. Yeah. So there's nothing new that anyone can surprise you with.
Well, that's not true. I'm sure there's lots of things that I haven't tried yet. But it's you have to try it.
Okay.
Because you don't know. I mean, it's like, yeah.
And when you're working in a studio setting, you have the ability to set up something like that, a press or a rack to dry, and just wait, or like your mushrooms on the paper towels.
Yeah.
Just let time process the material and then see what happens.
Yeah, totally.
If you're on deadline for a client, it's a little different.
Yeah.
But you still have other material to work with.
Yeah.
Because you still do private commissions, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so like when I travel, a lot of time people will say, well, we don't have what you have in the Northwest. But it's not important because you always want to work with what's available locally.
Yes.
You know, and so it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about the word foraging? You use that, don't you?
Yeah. So I think that I really feel pretty strongly about foraging very carefully and sustainably. I personally, when I go walk in the woods, I leave things alone. I never bring bags along. I don't bring a backpack.
Okay.
I just don't. I'm lucky to have several friends who have quite a bit of land, and I do forage there with their permission.
Sure.
But it's like you don't want to take off huge sheets of moss. You just want to do a little bit here, and you want to do a little bit there, so that everything can regenerate nicely.
I love it. It kind of reminds me of a conversation I've had recently with people growing native perennials for cut flowers, but also for a regenerative agriculture. Mm-hmm. So they're like, maybe have some native perennials. They cut 2/3 and leave 1/3 for the pollinators.
Exactly.
So you're kind of in that take some, leave some balance.
Yeah.
I love that. And I'm sure that mushroom hunters have to do that too, right, Julie?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, or when I see turkey tails, you know, which are pretty prevalent here in the woods, you know, you don't want to take all the turkey tails of this.
You'll take a little bit here and there.
You take some pieces and then you go to the next one.
Wow.
Yeah, you just want to be really mindful. So, for instance, I do a lot of foraging in the neighborhood in the fall or after a windstorm. After a windstorm again, because we have old trees here, all these lichen cover branches and moss cover branches that are on the street, that's all for the taking.
That's the community service. Your neighbors are happy for you.
Yeah, there is this in the neighborhood. There are a few homes that have this variety of eucalyptus that loses its bark every fall.
Love that.
Really magnificent.
I love that
shedding
bark.
And it just literally litters the sidewalk. I'll go back two or three times. I'll go back, you know, because it's only available at that time of the year.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you probably have a stash from last year that you can always pull out if you need it.
Yeah. I do have a nice stash there. obviously in Nepal.
Well, we could talk forever, but I just want to wrap up by asking you about how people can take workshops with you. And as I said, we're going to post a link to your calendar, and you're constantly adding things.
Yeah.
But you're going to Vermont in April to teach with Allison Ellis.
And Hitomi and Phoebe Higgins.
Okay. Yeah. So that we'll post that class.
You.
And then I just met with Michelle Kinney from Pacific Northwest Florist Association here in Portland. And she said you're teaching in April.
Yeah.
Here at the studio?
No, not at the studio, at the flower market.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can have more students then.
Yeah, more students.
Are you teaching two half-day workshops?
Yes, two half-day workshops. One is on botanical jewelry and the other one is on woodland centerpieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a little amuse-bouche of what the book is, right?
Yes.
What is the rest? You're probably so happy to have the book out. Now you can just do your own work and not have the deadlines.
No more deadlines for a while. And then I'm teaching some woodland classes here in the studio and they're listed on my website.
Okay. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I couldn't be happier to wish you the best for this book and encourage people who have followed Françoise forever to get your hands on this. Take a workshop or a virtual class.
Yeah.
and just observe, right?
Yeah. I mean, just look through different eyes. Yeah, notice what's out there. Beautiful foliage, ground covers, branches, whatever.
I will say before we go, you do make a gorgeous model. And little did you know you're going to be put in like the adult version of your childhood outfit. You've got a little sweater and a knit cap and a basket on your back. That must have brought back great memories.
Yeah. Those baskets are actually very prevalent, at least that one village where we stayed that one year.
In Switzerland.
Yeah, in Switzerland.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You've come full circle, yeah. Françoise. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Deborah.
Oh, what a treat.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the other thing that I'm kind of nutty about is all the shaved bark.
Yeah.
This friend of mine has, her husband is a woodworker, and I get all the wood shavings from these projects.
Man.
Oh. So Françoise, I'm just filming a little bit because I think people will like to see this. Julie asked you if these pieces were photographed for your Woodlands book. These were just you just get an idea and you create.
And I just like to explore and try. Like this florist gave me this piece, this magnificent piece of wood a few months ago, and which was secured onto this base. And it was a little too linear. Added these on, you know, to make it more...
So this is your kind of your base of art supplies.
Yeah, it looks a little messy here, but it's all right. So then this other friend, her husband is a woodworker also, and I got these wood shavings from her.
Oh my goodness! And it's so interesting because someone was just telling me that Metalino, that product
Metalino.
Is hard to find now.
Yeah.
So this is sort of your version of it.
Yeah.
And it's more natural.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Mm. You see,
I
added some so that it kind of gave this movement.
I love that. What is that vase? Is it on a vase? Oh,
so
it's on a vase.
It's this super cool vase that a friend, she used to do events and she stopped working as a florist. And so she gave me this amazing vase.
Oh, right. It's almost like a lantern.
Super cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I don't know why they somehow landed on paper towels.
Yes.
And so I discovered totally by accident that they've dehydrated.
Yeah.
So these little guys, it takes 2 to 3 days, maybe 3 days for them to dehydrate. These guys,
and you're just doing it open air.
Yeah. I just have a
paper towels
here.
That suck out
and
the moisture.
So, like, I'll buy. A little container of this, of these little mushrooms, and it will, let's say, it takes 2 paper towels to put them all on, and 2 days later, I can move them to 1 paper towel because they've shrank that much.
I know. You know, 80-90% of a mushroom is
water. I mean, it's like when you cook them,
you know,
they shrink so much.
Oh, they're such beautiful specimens.
Aren't they just
fantastic? Is that just a regular, mushroom?
I don't know the name. I found it at, so usually at Asian grocery stores, they have a much better selection of vegetables.
Yeah, the cultivated
general,
mushrooms.
But of mushrooms too. And so I have no idea but look how beautiful this is.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's like almost like a...
They have, it's like somebody painted on all of them.
It is. It's really detailed.
The textures.
Like a bird's egg.
Their
forms and shapes
and then,
based on
you know,
that.
About 3 to 6 months after I have dehydrated them, they'll kind of fall apart.
Okay.
They disintegrate.
Because they
basically.
Just kind of, as Julie said, they're mostly water, so there's no...
Yeah.
They literally disintegrate.
Yeah.
They become
powder. The other
powder.
Thing you could try is after you dehydrate them, throw them in the freezer, do a quick freeze on them, and that might get any little... bugs that are still remaining in there to die, and then they might have a little bit longer life.
I actually get all these at the store. When we did the mushroom chapter on the book, we had asked if she could lead us on a tour, you know, to go get mushrooms, and the day we were going to do it, it poured. And Teresa said, you know, we can do a shoot, you know, when it's
raining.
Right,
when it's pouring.
So, but Sweet Tiffany, she went anyways, and she brought back these, that's what's in the book, these amazing mushrooms. And then Teresa did a photo shoot with them. She did a flat lay and stuff like that. But those don't keep. They, like, within 2 days, they were, were stinky.
Some of them were
bleached,
and they'll all just turn into a mushy, gooey, gooey mess. But I will dehydrate those in a dehydrator, and I can get them to keep and use them, rehydrate them for dyes and pigments. But, so you could try, possibly, and I can dehydrate some.
Oh,
my dehydrator, I just have a little food dehydrator that I dedicate to mushrooms. And then if you do a little flash freeze, any little organism that's still
and
in
and she had these ivy roots, and she sent them to me, and then I just decorated with all these things. Otherwise, it still looked great. And these things here, that's another favorite. They're Galathea leaves that I buy at the flower market, and I hang them upside down. And here, in 2 weeks.
What kind of leaf is it?
Calathea leaves.
Really?
It's you know, that house plant, that house plant.
Right, but it gets
and
so inky black.
And so they're, well, in the back, they're dark purple. And so they're these big flat leaves, and you see how, you know, beautiful. And you hang them upside down, and within 10 days, I use them in everything.
Wow.
They are so spectacular.
This is your secret sauce, Françoise. You look at everything and think, how can I dry it, preserve it,
how can I use
make it into my sculpture?
Like these here, they are, both of these. So they are palm leaves. And so I just manipulate them.
Yeah.
And then I just like I pinned them together. And this originally was for a headpiece.
Yes. Oh, now it'll be something else.
And then I can use them in whatever design I do. You know, they lose their color, but that's okay.
Françoise, how long have those been drying?
I've had these for over a year.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Love it.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Please visit slowflowerspodcast.com for episode 655 to watch the replay video of my interview with Françoise, including a peek at her amazing collection of natural art supplies inside her charming studio. You'll also find a link to Françoise's upcoming book events, classes, and workshops, and a link to order your own copy of Wonder of the Woodlands. Our next sponsor thank you goes to Store It Cold, creators of the revolutionary CoolBot, a popular solution for flower farmers, studio florists, and farmer florists. Save thousands when you build your own walk-in cooler with the CoolBot and an air conditioner. If you don't have time to build your own, they also have turnkey units available. Learn more at storeitcold.com. And thank you to Red Twig Farms. Based in Johnstown, Ohio, Red Twig Farms is a family-owned farm specializing in peonies, daffodils, tulips and branches, and a popular peony bouquet by mail program. Learn more at redtwigfarms.com. I'm so glad you joined us today. The Slow Flowers podcast is a member-supported endeavor, downloaded more than 1 million times by listeners like you. Thank you for listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. As our movement gains more supporters and more passionate participants who believe in the importance of our domestic cut flower industry, the momentum is contagious. I know you feel it too. If you're new to our weekly show or our long-running podcast, check out all of our resources at slowflowerssociety.com. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of The Slow Flowers Show and The Slow Flowers Podcast. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Brenlin. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more slow flowers on the table, one stem, one vase at a time. Thanks so much for joining us today, and I'll see you next week.